Blog Talk Radio.
Turnbuckle Turmoil fans, Q Team, Sign Guy with you here on another Sunday afternoon. A couple of quick show notes. If you're looking for some wrestling today, you have NWA Blue Collar Wrestling, where I will be later this afternoon at the North Portland Eagles, 7611 North Exeter in Portland, Oregon. Also today, as always, the weekly show in Jeffersonville, Indiana at the arena. That is Kentuckiana Die Hard Wrestling. New policy in place now. If you bring a new toy, then your children 12 and under are free with the donation of a new toy. So get out there, support independent pro wrestling wherever it may be. Some sad news to report. The wrestling world reeling this morning after the passing, after a long time, illness of Nick Bockwinkel. Nick, of course, long time AWA World Heavyweight Champion. He was the Pacific Northwest Heavyweight Champion in the 1960s. He wrestled in a lot of territories, was WCW Commissioner in the 90s. One of the most underrated professional wrestlers, perhaps, of this generation. He was so very, very good. Very sad to hear of his passing. So, QT, can we hit the 10-bell salute as we pay homage to the late Nick Bockwinkel? QT, lots been going on since I was away. I just got back from a successful tour of the Midwest, and I'm back at it here in the state of Oregon. Last night, NWA show. Today, got NWA Blue Collar. I've been busy.
Little Sangay, I'm sure the number one question on most Turnbuckle Turmoil fans was, what did you have when you flew into Chicago? There's rumors that you had a charbroiled burger. A charbroiled burger, yes.
I can confirm that, and it was absolutely phenomenal.
Now, Sangay, I thought your stomach would be slightly upset because there's a rumor that you had a run-in and you were chokeslammed at Hoosier Pro Wrestling from a person who is pretty large and is kind of familiar to both of us. Yes.
That is also unfortunately correct. You can look on the tube of view and see said horrendous actions by one Stompin' Steve as well as Crazy Mary Dobson. They double-teamed chokeslam me at one point. I was chokeslammed twice for no reason.
and that would slightly injure a lesser man, wouldn't it?
A lesser man would have died. They wouldn't have survived.
Oh, okay, died, yes. Okay. Died or injured, yes. Wow, all right. And there's also a rumor that you may have had a run-in with some firemen again.
I did. I was seeking revenge. Now, as you might recall, some firemen tried to commit sports entertainer-cide on me at the HBW Arena a couple of years ago. There is a literal dent in the floor at the HBW Arena where my face struck. The more I looked at that dent, the more I wanted my revenge. Jerry Wilson laid out arm wrestling, which I accepted because I'm not afraid to beat some firemen in some arm wrestling. But yet, they did not follow standard Canadian arm wrestling rules. They blatantly and with callous violated said rules. I believe I should have won all three arm wrestling contests by disqualification.
Now, can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners what exactly these Canadian rules are and how they differ from American rules? For instance, there's a video on air of a Hoosier Pro Wrestling match between Budget Deficit and Dave the Beast Barnett. How do their rules differ from your rules that you faced with the firemen?
Supposed to transpire was someone was supposed to count in the metric system and give a brief pause between counts. I was fast counted. I was not ready and prepared to start my domination of said arm wrestling when the word was given to go. They had an unfair advantage knowing that the promoter was going to fast count me there.
Aha, I see. Now, was the promoter in the wrestling ring at the time the arm wrestling match took place, or the three matches?
Yes, he was, and I believe he was given signals, making eyes at the firemen so they knew when to go. They had an advantage that I did not.
Yes. That first split 1/10 of a second in any arm wrestling match is crucial. And can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners who this commissioner may have been?
Jerry Wilson himself.
I see. Now, did you happen to glance and see if Jerry Wilson exchanged any money with said fireman? Was any money exchanged?
Well, I'm sure there was because they were passing that fireman's cheer fund boot around. I'm sure old deep pockets and short arms Wilson dropped a few dollars down his pockets, you know, just by accident, I'm sure he'll say.
I see. Now, was there a referee along in this match, besides the commissioner, a referee?
There is no sanctioned referee, which also violates Canadian arm wrestling rules. It's in subsection 37, paragraph
4. I see. Okay. Now, are you going to launch an official protest on Facebook? And are you going to give the papers to Devin Bellinger, who's on First Sports Cards, Marysville, Washington? He said that something about you have to submit the papers to him and he will forward them to Jerry Wilson in official protest. Yes.
That would cost me a fortune in copy fees because I'd have to have like 25 copies to give to all his personalities.
Yes. Well, yeah, everyone knows that when you forward papers with Devin Bellinger, they have a mysterious way of disappearing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Plus, he choke slammed me. Who does that to an innocent Canadian citizen in a strange country just out there to manage the amazing Maria?
Yes. I heard Devin Bellinger did choke slam you. Yes.
Yeah. He and Crazy Mary Dobson.
Mysteriously, Devin Bellinger seemed to have gained about 3 inches in height, 3.5 inches in height, and 180 pounds.
Well, he's really let himself go recently, and I believe he wears lifts in his boots.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, here's a question that was flooded before I came on the switchboard today. Can you confirm or add any truth to the rumors that some members of the Razor Ramones were indeed at this wrestling match where you were chokeslammed, the Razor Ramones?
I cannot confirm it. I do not believe so, but it is possible that some of them made it out Saturday of last week.
I see. And there are also rumors, Sangai, that you were kind of a downcast, and one of the black marks of the trip, maybe a gray mark, was that Beth Sharp didn't serve you any oatmeal. And oatmeal, as you know, is the power food of all professional wrestlers and firefighter foils alike.
It really is, and I was hugely disappointed by that. She promised me oatmeal. She gave me a specific time to be there for said oatmeal, gave me an address, but the house numbers were not illuminated. It took me 25 extra minutes to find said house. And then when I got to the side window to be served, like Beast Barnett, there's no oatmeal. No coffee.
Wow.
Nothing. Nothing served.
Wow, okay. Usually houses, I don't know about Indiana, do they usually come with side windows, like a drive-thru?
Yes, that's how Beast Barnett gets served, is oatmeal and coffee.
Is it? And now, does Dave Barnett always get served at the same house?
Yes.
Oh, okay, one would hope so, yes. I mean, I myself would be frightened if I didn't know Dave the Beast Barnett and he came wandering up to my house in Indiana and I just happened to have a skylight that was fixed in a wall, kind of like a porthole that you see on military ships, and I hear a knock, 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 and there's Dave the Beast Barnett, and then I'd have to open my porthole, and because I used to be in a military marine service, and I could see, hey, where's my oatmeal? That'd be very frightening. Yes, please.
Would you serve him oatmeal?
I guess. No. I want to enter. It's my. I want to make it my mission, and hopefully, I will be going back to Indiana this spring or summer to serve Dig the Beast Barnett buttered grits.
Does he like buttered grits?
I'm not sure, but he's going to try them.
Well, okay. Now, are you going to serve a specific coffee with these grits? Because you know how he loves his coffee.
Oh, a coffee. Boy, that's getting into quite the overhead expenses for budget deficit. I might serve him, let's say, instant coffee. I'd have to have that water pretty hot. And then, you know, Senka crystals.
Do they still make Senka?
I think they do.
Wow, can we get this confirmed?
Yes, you can. Is Laren the Golden Songbird Amos anywhere near your vicinity at the moment?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm just going to have her look up on, Google. Don't know how I miss it. Okay, never mind. Okay, I was going to have her look up on Google if there is Senka coffee. Yes.
She is not near my vicinity at present time. But
no,
if we can make a plea to Beast Barnett to look that up, that'd be great.
Yes. Dave the Beast Barnett, if you're listening, please look up the coffee that I might serve you with your grits. Yes. Yes, I hope to maybe serve these grits with a little bit of butter, some cracked pepper, and some sour cream. Just delicious. Yes.
Hopefully Beast will enjoy all of that.
Oh, well, yeah, even if he does, you know. I think Dave the Beast Barnett is of the temperament. Even if he didn't like something, he'd kind of, these are very good. He won't say delicious because that would be telling a lie, but he'd say, these are very good. He'd probably say something like, boy, I ate a lot beforehand, but I'm glad I'm trying these grits, but I think this one serving will do. See? That's what he'd say. Even if he didn't like them. Oh, hey, I think we got Sonny Ono just popped up. Let me see if I... Okay. Let me check. Okay, there's a microphone. Sonny Ono, do we have Sonny Ono with us?
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Hey, okay. We were just talking about grits and oatmeal and Sangai's trip to the Midwest, where he had, unfortunately, was chokeslammed twice. I'm going to let you Sangai tell you how he was chokeslammed. Yes.
Thank
Go
you, QT. Well, Mr. Ono, we want to welcome you back to the show. Been a while since we had you on, but you've been fairly busy in the months since you were last on. You've been doing some appearances for Hood Slam. You've done some conventions. Your son doing very well in amateur wrestling. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about everything you've been doing in the last few months?
Oh, you know, I just do things as he comes, and we're doing the WrestleMania. There was shows out there doing the San Francisco Bay Area, so I did a show with Hood Slam, and then Eric Bischoff was out there doing a kind of talk show with. Talking about the Monday Night Raw thing, so Monday Night War. So I was out there with him, visited with him a little bit during that weekend, and I did a show with Ultimo Dragon on the same weekend. So I ended up doing about three shows, and that was a great time seeing my old friends, and got to visit, and we're. Ultimo Dragon asked Eric and I to go to Cuba to do some wrestling. Do some wrestling in Cuba. Professional wrestling has not been in Cuba for many years, so we may be going that way. Probably in next spring or next year sometime. So that's as far as professional wrestling goes. That's but extent of it. And an amateur front, my son who wrestled for Wartburg College, which is a D3 college, private college here in Iowa, they were run up last year. And the last 4 years before that, they were 4 years in a row, they were national champion, NCAA national champion. So it's a pretty good school as far as wrestling goes. And, of course, Iowa is undisputed hotbed of amateur wrestling. The Iowa University just wrestled Oklahoma State yesterday, and it was 42,000 people on an outdoor stadium. So you can imagine, I think previous record was something like 15,000. So, wrestling is big here. You can imagine 42,000 people watching a college dual tournament, it's a great being in Iowa. It's a great state for wrestling, and like I said, it's one of the best thing. The winter is a little harsh here, but the best thing about winter in Iowa is that there's wrestling.
Now, when you were in WCW, was there a lot of people that worked for the company that were heavy followers of amateur wrestling? Because some of the professionals got their start, be it in high school or college wrestling. Do they still follow the amateur side?
A lot of things that a lot of techniques. Whether in the rings or, obviously it's wrestling, so it's amateur base. So you have a heck of an advantage if you have an amateur wrestling background, obviously, if you want to get in professional wrestling. Because, before pro wrestling as we know it, it was called catch wrestling, which is now kind of getting into known now as submission wrestling. So that was, Frank Gotch and those guys, they were doing it, before anybody else was. They were the real deal. And of course, he's originally from down the street from here in Hampton, Iowa. So, there's a lot of wrestlers that has professional wrestlers, who has an amateur wrestling background, and that's a great advantage. Many of the wrestlers at WCW that I know, and certainly from, New Japan, almost everybody, of course, as one of the most famous Japanese wrestler, Masa Saito was a 1964 Olympian at Greco-Roman wrestling. So, you know, there's a lot of wrestling and judo or mixed martial art. You know, a lot of those guys, certainly from Japan, are there's probably more from Japan than it is in the United States. But, you know, they all have those kind of – and, you know, they're undisputed they're great athletes, bar none. So, you know, that's my understanding of a lot of the guys' background.
Now, in the last few hours, the wrestling world's been mourning the fact that Nick Bockwinkel passed away after a very lengthy illness. He was commissioner at WCW in the mid-90s, and he was, of course, part of the AWA for many, many, many years. Do you have any memories of Bockwinkel that you'd like to share with us today?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what a gentleman. He was always well-dressed. You know, he personified what you imagine the gentleman and classy guy that you would think the world champion would be. And of course, I know him from, you know, as a fan from Vern Gagne's up here in Minneapolis, All-Star Wrestling, you know, as far as the territory goes. And, of course, when I started working at WCW, he was a commissioner there. You know, just great guy. I mean, you know, as far as, you know, watching, helping me out with, just give me pointers, and, you know, to be a manager and, you know, what my duties are and that kind of thing. And he just, you know, those are the guys I'm honored to say that I know the guy. I knew the guy, and there's nothing. I don't think not many people can say anything negative about Nick Bockwinkel. He was a class. He personified what the world champion is, in and out of the ring. You know, he was the original GQ man. You know, so it's sad that he's gone. And I'm sure that he's going to be missed by a great majority of the wrestling fan, you know, new and old.
Absolutely, you will. Now, I believe you recently took part in a WWE taping of a DVD or something for the network that focused on Eric Bischoff. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you did for WWE recently?
Well, yeah, Eric is, you know, they're doing a featured DVD for him. Obviously, they wanted to know a lot about the background and how he got into wrestling and all that stuff. And since I know Eric, you know, Eric and I go back, you know, almost 40 years. So, you know, we were young men, and you know, traveling to a karate tournament, and that's how we met, and that's how we became friends, and we've done some business together, and consequently, you know, that's how he, because of one of our business dealings, you know, how he approached aforementioned Vern Gagne, who had a syndicated TV show, and we wanted to put our product on his show, and Eric approached them, and that's really his connection to professional wrestling, and you know, and he got hired from that meeting, you know, that led to him getting hired as an announcer, and the rest is kind of history. So we talked about that, and you know, I kind of gave the background of that portion of, and we talked a little bit more about, you know, my role as far as at WCW with New Japan and being a person who just makes sure that the business went well with them, and that was my primary role, and So it's interesting that we got to do the, you know, I was honored to be asked to be part of, you know, his DVD.
Was this the first time that you ever dealt directly with World Wrestling Entertainment?
As far as working goes, yeah. I mean, I've been in touch with them earlier. I mean, you know, early in 2000, I did talk to people at their front office, but maybe doing some stuff with them. But you know, just timing wasn't right, and there was other stuff going on, and so. But yeah, I mean, as far as actually doing something for the company. It will be the first time.
Obviously, at this point in time, they've made a lot of money doing various retrospective DVDs on WCW. They've featured entire series about the Monday Night Wars. Do you think that this might open the door for other projects involving you with the company, or do you to see this more as a one-off type of deal?
No, I mean, I really don't know. I mean, you know, life is, as you guys get old as I am, you'll find that life is, you know, many door of opportunity comes around, and it just, you have to be prepared to be able to, you know, be able to embrace that. And you know, I've been fortunate enough that my children are, you know, my youngest, you know, is the one in college. So, you know, I have a lot more time to do a project now than I have in past. You know, if there's a project that comes around or there's opportunity that comes around, you know, if there's any way I could be useful, you know, I would approach even recent as in last couple weeks to go do some work overseas you know, it's just a matter of how much time it takes for me to do the thing and make sure that I can be, you know, productive in whatever the role that they ask me to do. You know, if I thought there was something that I can add to their product you know, if it was mutually beneficial. You know, I mean, like I said, you know, you just got to be prepared and be ready to embrace the opportunity if that comes around. And who knows? Who knows what the future holds, you know?
Now in professional wrestling, it's an interesting time as there's several companies that have national television outlets. You have, of course, WWE, and you have Impact Wrestling, as well as Ring of Honor on the Destination America network. Lucha Underground has become kind of a cult phenomenon, airing on the El Rey network. With so much national exposure right now for various wrestling companies, do you think that the wrestlers coming in might have an easier time than wrestlers that came in, say, 10 to 15 years ago?
Well, you know, it's business is obviously, you know, clearly different than when WCW and WWE was butting heads, and I can honestly say I'm honored to be that I was doing that period of time and got to play part in that, but you know, I mean, aside from WWE, no disrespect to you know, TNA or Ring of Honor or Lucha Underground, you know, they're not in competition with WWE. I mean, they're at different level, you know, financially, exposure-wise and, you know, rating-wise and all that. One of the best things that ever happened back, you know, and I really mentioned this during our interview with WWE that competition is great for business. It just is, because he makes us better. That's, you know, honestly, that's what America is about. You know, why do we have various different automobile companies? You know, one's trying to do to present better product out there. If there was only a Ford, you know, I don't know what we'd be driving right now. You know what I mean? Everybody be driving a Ford, and we all might be driving a version of a Model A. I mean, I think it's very important that the competition we have. And in order to have a competition, you have to have a viable competition. You can't be, off-brand kind of thing. And like I said, no disrespect. It's just that I think, and obviously times are amazingly different, you know, in the last 15 years, because, you know, they pretty much have a monopoly. When I say they, the WWE, I think they have a monopoly, and everybody wants to get there, and they can determine what those terms are. When it was at least two company, WCW and WWE, you know, at least you can see what was the best deal financially and otherwise, where you can take your service to. And you know, that opportunity doesn't exist anymore. So I think times are different. And to answer your question, I think it's much more difficult for independent guys to make a living, be able to put a bread on the tables and support your family. It's quite difficult for people who's not with the main company. And like I said, you know, when TNA first was started, about 15 years ago, Jeff Jarrett actually flew me to Vegas and offered me a job with TNA. Once again, I said earlier, an opportunity was there, but the timing wasn't right. And, you know, this was when my oldest was getting out of high schools, and you know, I had three more, and it just didn't work out. And I'm forever grateful that Jeff gave me opportunity for me to do that, and we remain friends. And if there was something I could do with Jeff, we've been on the phone and we talked to each other in the last a few times. So, I mean, it's one of those things. It's just that he has to be to a point that it's beneficial for both parties, and certainly that I can, you know, help them with their product. You know, one of the things about being a manager is that, you know, there's a different kind of managers. You know, obviously there's a manager that does the mouthpiece for like a foreign wrestler who doesn't speak any English, and that was really my main role till later on when I was with of course somebody like Ernest Miller, who was more of a sidekick. You know, Ernest doesn't need anybody to be talking for him, but I was a reason, why things didn't go right. It wasn't, so I took the heat from Ernest. So, I mean, there's a different role the manager plays, obviously, and one of the unfortunate things I think right now is wrestlers. Some wrestlers, especially foreign wrestlers, have a difficult time without having someone who can speak for them so they can stay current in the storyline that the company is trying to create. You know, it's difficult to be in that role. I mean, you could be a greatest athlete wrestler, but if you can't, you know, move that into the storyline by speaking, or you know, then you have a very difficult time to getting over. So, you know, I think that's one of the things that I think WCW did very well. You know, we had the luchadors, and we had the tremendous amount of Japanese wrestlers with a phenomenal wrestling ability, and And, you know, I was honored to be able to work with all those Japanese female wrestlers and, you know, everybody from Ultimo Dragon to Yuji Nagata to Kaz Hayashi. I mean, you know, I was fortunate. I mean, I got to work, you know, I managed Muda, Chono, you know, Masa Saito, Kanemoto, Jushin Thunder Liger. I mean, who's who in wrestling from Japan I got to work with, including, you know, who's who in women wrestling from Japan, you know, Chigusa Nagayo to Bo Nakano to Akira Hokuto. I mean, who else is there? You know what I mean? So I was very fortunate.
Now, speaking of WCW, they had a lot of bookers over the years. They seem to go through them on a regular basis. Who do you think was the best fit for you booking-wise? Who do you feel was most in tune with Sonny Ono and what he brought to the table and utilized him in the best way?
Well, I think when WCW, on height of WCW, when we had a Nitro and Thunder and Saturday Night and syndicated shows, you know, we were doing like a 9 hours of television a week, which was, when you think about it, how crazy that is. And you know, you when you're doing that many hours of television shows, you can't feed the audience. Just, you know, much as you love steak and potatoes, you can't give, you know, Hulk Hogan and Sting and Lex Luger and Vader and, you know, they can only give so much. You know, you can't watch 9 hours of that. So one of the things that Eric did very well was getting those cruiserweights and those action pack, you know, from Chris Benoit to Dean Malenko to Eddie Guerrero. You know, those guys, along with because they had experience wrestling with those luchadores and all those, they worked in Japan for many years for New Japan and All Japan, and you know, so we gave them something different, like a lot of time in the second hour, you know, and third hour. So it, so I think that program booking was pretty phenomenal. And to answer your question, who was best at it? I think Kevin Sullivan was. You know, he and not only that, he understood how to do business with, you know, certainly was, and my perspective was those Japanese talent, how to take care of them, you know, how to, what they did here in the United States, how that resonated into what, you know, how they were perceived in Japan. So knowing that, I think Kevin Sullivan was probably best when it, you know, to answer your question.
Well, at this time, my co-host QT is standing by, and I know that he has some questions for you, so I'm going to hand things over to him for a bit.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Sangai. Hello, Sonny. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Now, Sonny, before you came on the air, Sangai and I were talking about grits. Are you a big fan of grits?
You're talking about grit as in food grit?
Yes.
Well, I'm not a big fan of grit. I'm not sure what it is. I think it's a corn-based, some kind of oatmeal kind of thing. Obviously, I worked in Atlanta, so the grit was many of the diet of some of the wrestler from the South. But to answer your question, I just, you know, it's the greatest. I mean, I love tofu, but you can't just eat tofu by itself. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like it really has no taste. And then grits kind of same kind of deal. And I think it's, you know, it's ethnically based, southern version of side dish. So, but I, you know, I could be wrong. It's just that I never had nobody prepare grit for me. Is maybe as I would like to. So, you know, who knows? But, no, I'm not, to answer your question, I'm not a big fan of grit. At least I never had a real, I can't say hey, let's go out and eat grits.
Oh, all right. Well, now you see, I have two missions in life. Now, I used to serve grits when I was stationed in the Coast Guard when I was down south. And if I ever get the opportunity, I'll make you a bowl of grits along
all
with
right.
a referee for Hoosier Pro Wrestling, Dave the Beast Barnett.
Okay. All right. Well, that's, you know, that's fair. All right. Well, you know, next time when I'm around your area, we're definitely going to have to go, you know, I'm going to have to take you up on that.
Oh, all right. That's fantastic. Okay. Well, now, Sonny, some people might disagree with your assessment that Iowa is the hotbed of wrestling. Some people say it's Minnesota, and some people say it's Oklahoma. My question is, has your son Kaz wrestled in Oklahoma on a road trip?
Yeah, he has. I mean, as a youth, I mean, he wrestled down in one of the big tournament that they have down in Oklahoma, the youth tournament. They have one of the roller tournament. It's you know, he attracts over 2,000 kids from all over the country. Yeah, so Kaz's been down there a couple of times. He never won the tournament, but he All-American a few times. And as a high school wrestler, he wrestled at the Rollers a World Tournament in, I believe he was in, I'm trying to think where it was. It was in California. Oh, no, he was in Nevada, Reno, Nevada. He took second place there when he was a high school senior. Yeah, so, you know, he wrestled all over. He wrestled in Japan. You know, he's probably one of the only very few kids that ever wrestled internationally already, you know, as a youth. So, let's just put it, he's well seasoned as a wrestler goes. As amateur wrestler goes.
Yes, I believe when he was a senior in high school, he wrestled at the 126-pound weight division.
Yeah, he was a senior. He won a state tournament in the state of Iowa. He went undefeated as Class 3A. 3A is a big school, or the biggest. There's a three classes in the state of Iowa, 1A, 2A, and 3A, and he was 3A, which is a big school group. And he went 46-0 as a senior. He was never taken down as a senior. And year before that, he was runner-up a year before that. So he was a finalist as a junior, obviously he was the state champ as a senior at 126.
Now is Kaz better at the double leg takedown or the single leg takedown?
You know, he's pretty good at both. I mean, he liked getting his face dirty and taking a double, but and he's got a variety of takedowns that he likes to do. As he's gotten bigger in college, he's wrestling at 141 this year, and he wrestled 141 last year. He's ranked number 10th in the country right now by Intermat and NCAA at Division III. So, he wants to climb that ladder and hopefully that he can contend this year at the national tournament, which will be in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, which is home of the same building as when NWO was when NWO really took over WCW, was at that building where Eric gave that NWO speech from the U.S. Cellular Center in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. So that's where Kaz will be wrestling, hopefully, for NCAA National Championship I think it's mid March of the next year.
Oh, all right. Now, is he a sophomore at Warburton?
Yeah. He's a sophomore this year. Matter of fact, he'll get on a mat, first time on a mat for the season on Wednesday, and I think on Saturday they'll be going to a little north of Milwaukee in Concordia, Wisconsin, Concordia University. On Saturday, he'll be wrestling a big tournament there. We'll find out what he's made of and where he falls in and all that. But I'll keep you abreast in, and if you guys follow me on Facebook, you know, I usually keep abreast of what my kids are doing. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how well he does this year.
Oh, all right. You may have to send some flash results to our Turnbuckle Turmoil Facebook page. I'm sure Dimitri, who is in charge of the Turnbuckle Turmoil Facebook page, would also like to hear that, because he has a kid who is, I believe, he's either a sophomore or junior in high school. He's in the heavyweight division, and he's wrestling for Everett High School, and he shows very good promise. Zay.
Good.
The Warrior kid,
yeah.
Zay. Yes.
Yeah. But, I'm going to tell you, I mean, Pennsylvania is amazing in high school wrestling. They probably has more stud comes out of Pennsylvania high school and then Iowa. I will give you that. Oklahoma, you know, has kind of fallen behind for that and goes on high school wrestling. You know, Illinois is really strong on high school wrestling, especially in Olympic style, which is freestyle and Greco. You know, I have to argue with you. Where else are you going to find 45 or 42,000 fans to come to watch a dual meet? I mean, think about that for a minute. If you can Google and look, but it's a quite an amazing number of people to just come watch, you know, a 10 matches of college wrestling. Of course, Iowa University is ranked number 3. And I believe Oklahoma State was ranked number 2, and Iowa beat Oklahoma State. I believe it was 18-16, and it was a hell of a scrap. So you know, so for those of us like me, who's a big amateur wrestling fan, great feeling to have that we have that many fans in the state of Iowa.
Wow. All right. Well, now Minnesota is also a state that has produced some good wrestlers. Didn't Brock Lesnar wrestle for Minnesota?
Yeah, he did. Absolutely, he did. And Minnesota is always, you know, always in top 5. It's so competitive at that level, at NCAA Division I. It's pretty amazing that those guys can actually be a student at the same time, because you know being a student athlete is quite a challenge to begin with, and to be a wrestler, you know, you got to remember wrestling is only fighting or martial art thought through the school system, only thing. I mean, and recognized by NCAA, if you really think about it, you know. And it's such an individual sport, so although they do keep a team score, but end of the day, you know, you can't tag, and you certainly can't, you know, pass the ball. You know, it's you and the guy in front of you. So I think it builds different kind of character and different kind of responsibility. And, you know, that's why, you know, I love wrestling and I love martial arts in general.
Well, Sonny, to my knowledge, Cale Sanderson is the last and only NCAA wrestler to never lose a match. Can you tell us about Joey Davis out of Notre Dame, who is on the verge of achieving this feat?
Yeah, it's a very interesting story about Joey Davis. Matter of fact, Kaz was recruited and had a by Notre Dame as well. They're Division II. They were national champion a couple years ago. Kaz was recruited. He had opportunity to go there as a full ride scholarship, but he chose to stay in Iowa. Joey Davis, you know, he was probably out of California, I believe, and he was probably the top, one of the top. I mean, he could have went anywhere. Let's put it that way. He could have went anywhere, you know, in college to wrestle. And if you ask him, and from the interview and the stuff that I read, is that he chose Division II Notre Dame because he didn't want the athletic to be he wanted to be a student athlete, not athlete student. Meaning that he knew the demand of D1 and what they expected him. And he wanted to have some say so on and where he wanted to how his college career was going to go, and he's a phenomenal wrestler. You got to understand, when you're a Division II wrestler or Division III wrestler, you still wrestle Division I guys at the open tournaments and stuff like that. So for him to go undefeated, you know, you can't say, well, because he was Division II. No, he's competition. He wrestles with, you know, top guys from everywhere. So for him to be undefeated it's going to be pretty amazing. And I don't know what his futures are, if he's going to, you know, continue to wrestle after college and go into the amateur wrestling ranks with but he's a phenomenal talent without a doubt.
Well, Sonny, I read a little bit about Joey and this article about him, and it said that last May he wrestled Oklahoma State wrestler Alex Duringer in Times Square, New York, in what was billed as Salsa in the Square, a wrestling exhibition, and the Beat the Streets wrestling fundraiser, which raises this question. What two man-made, iconic, national landmarks would you like to see Kaz wrestle at? National landmarks,
well,
if he got the chance.
I don't know, but it's interesting just because my professional wrestling background, and I have always, you know, when people ask me what I've been doing for the last 15 years, I say, well, I'm still managing wrestler. It just happened to be my kid who's an amateur and collegiate wrestler now. That's always my standard answer. As far as Kaz wrestling goes, you know, the most important thing, obviously, is for him to have a great experience in college as a student athlete. And of course, you know, one step at a time. He's got to, you know, he wants to get up and hopefully before the 4 years is over, he can become, you know, NCAA champ, and that would be his accomplishment. Unfortunately, in wrestling, there isn't a lot of place to go after 4 years of wrestling, unless you go into, try to go into Olympic wrestling, because that's really the only place you can go. And you know, that's awful difficult because there is not enough funding, so you really can't. You know, it's hard to be a train for an Olympic wrestler when you don't have the money to train and be able to, you know, pay for the things that you need as a human being. So we'll see how that goes. But to answer your question, it's really funny because I get a lot of my friends who trains amateur wrestlers and inevitably, you know, go into professional wrestling, has approached me and certainly a few of my Japanese friends has approached me, and if Kaz will want to come to once his college career is over, if he wants to come and train at a few of the dojos in Japan to take a shot at being an amateur or be a professional wrestler. So we'll see how that goes.
Do you think there's any chance that maybe about 5 or 6 years down the road that Kaz could get in the ring with the Bella Twins or Natalya Neidhart?
Well, I wouldn't know, but you know, for 5-6 years from now, I think those ladies would, beautiful as they are now and talented they are now, I don't know where they'll be, and we certainly don't know where Kaz will be from 5 years from now.
Oh, all right. Well, is there any chance that we'll see a Sonny Ono bobblehead doll pretty soon?
You know, I would love to have, you know, that's one of my regrets. I was in like a 3 video games. There was WCW video games, and I shared this story with a few times. But one time I scolded Cass for doing something, and when he was a young boy, probably age of 5 or 6, and usually, you know, we gave him a timeout, and it dawned on me after a few minutes that usually the kids will come out of the corner and they'll say, can my timeout be, you know, over? Well, at this particular a time, he never came back and asked me to be done with. So I went downstairs to look for him, and he was in front of a video game, one of the WCW Mayhem games, and he had, I believe at the time, he had a Hulk Hogan beating the crap out of Sonny Ono in a video game. So I asked him what he was doing. He says, "Well, I'm having a Hulk beat you up, Dad." So that's how he was getting back at me. So, you know, those are the kind of things that you go, well, how many dad gets to do that? But one of the regrets I have is exactly that. That I wish there was more action figures and bobblehead that I had opportunity to get some, because, you know, we never had those things. So.
Ooh, wow, that's a nice story. Okay. All right. Well, Sonny, we're just about out of time. Is there any last people that you would like to say hi to or anything you'd like to plug?
Well, like I said, you know, at the beginning of the show, we talked about, great Nick Bockwinkel, and condolences to him and his family, and you know, he was just a great man, and Ernest Miller, Ultimo Dragon, those friends that I made through WCW with, you know, you know, Yuji Nagata, Kaz Hayashi, Chigusa Nagayo. I still talk to those people on a fairly regular basis. We stay in touch, and they, when you travel on the road like we did, you know, they do become part of your family, and everybody seemed to be doing really well. So I stay in touch with them, so shout out to my friend Eric, who's down in I think he just moved back to Arizona from Wyoming. So, and I appreciate him giving me the opportunity to be on his DVD. And to your fans out there, you know, you can get a hold of me through the Facebook and keep you abreast of what's going on with me. And hopefully see you on the other side of the tube. Who knows what future will bring for us.
All right. Well, fans, if you have a chance, check out Kaz. He has some wrestling matches that you can see on Sonny's Facebook page. We wish him well. We hope that Kaz gets to try grits at Warburton. And I hope to cook you grits someday. Yes.
All right. Sounds great. And I appreciate you having me. And, you know, just remember to tell people that if you look at a lot of the YouTube stuff with me and all the Japanese wrestlers and stuff, that, you know, that I was, you know, the innovator of selfie. You know, before when selfie became popular, I was doing it on a regular basis on every entrance on all the television show back in, you know, back in the 90s. So just whenever you announce me, you can announce me as the innovator of selfie.
Ooh, okay. We'll be sure to do that.
Okay.
All right, Sonny.
All right, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on, and you guys, you know, and keep up the good work, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care.